Hey, thank you so much for tuning in, folks. This is Another Bottle Down. My name is Mark Rayshap. It's December 30th, even though today we are pre-recording. It's I don't even know what date it is, but we've pre-recorded this episode because I'm either in Portugal or Tokyo. I'm not sure which. But we do take very seriously our dedication to giving you advice as far as what wines to drink. And tomorrow night is going to be our wonderful festival of popping some bubbly. So this is our champagne and sparkling wine edition of Another Bottle Down. I'm joined in the studio by three wonderful and very knowledgeable and very fun guests. We have Greg Willis from Ensemble Beverages, who is a representative in Texas of an amazing portfolio. I have Shad Scott, who is a friend of the show and has been on before. He's from Pioneer Wines. And Emily Arnold, who is from Specs Wine and Liquor, who is just working her tail off right now to just throw champagne out the door. So, guys, thank you so much for being here. It's a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Pleasure to be here.
Okay, great. So what is the number one thing? Folks are driving out there. Hopefully, you know, they're thinking about what wines they're going to be serving tomorrow night for their New Year's festivities. What's the biggest thing that you can give them first off, broad brushstrokes? Greg, what do you think?
Well, obviously, you want champagne.
Okay. So let's start with that. So champagne versus other sparkling wine.
Sure.
What's the difference?
Well, champagne has the pedigree. It's been doing this for several centuries at this point.
Right.
And it's also a pretty special place in the world. We can talk about sparkling for a flute for a celebratory moment at a wedding that you may not want to spend a lot of money on because you're just doing that for masses. But for something that matters, you're going to sit down with the people that you love on an important night. You want it to matter. So
right.
Champagne's where it's at.
And in your opinion, and I'll go through all of y'all, is there anything that really, really competes with champagne on the quality front? Shad, what do you think?
I don't think so. I've tasted a lot of bubbles, and there's a lot of great bubbles out there, but champagne is known by everybody because it is really that much better than every other wine in the category.
And that's not just marketing. I mean, a lot of people say, oh, you know, I had this this XYZ cava that's, you know, really inexpensive, and it was blind tasted and it beat out Bollinger vintage, blah, blah, blah. Is it really, really that big of a difference? And you know, is there that big difference between those everyday sparklers and, yeah?
Well, I think that it's all about what the event is. You know, if it's for me and my family, I'm drinking champagne on a big day, you know, on a celebratory moment. But if it's a, you know, a New Year's party or if it's a wedding or whatever, another occasion for bubbles, then maybe cava, you know, I'm not trying to put cava down. Or Prosecco. I'm just saying, for small groups that know the difference, champagne, accept no substitute. But I do think there are great cavas. And I think for any large scale thing where money, you know, where you can't pay $40 a bottle or $50 or however much the champagne is, cava is waiting there, and it's made with the same quality, just different grapes and different area. And I think it does a great job.
Yeah. So, Emily, when you turn to choose a bubbly, are you really quick to grab the champagne, or are you loving the cava as well?
If money isn't an issue, of course, I'm always reaching for champagne.
Okay.
For many years, I've always said if there's only one category of wine I can drink in the world, it would definitely be champagne.
Wow, your desert island beverage.
It is. I love champagne that much. And not just champagne, but sparkling wine in general. I'm a huge advocate for sparkling wine. And I think there's some really great sparkling wines in anybody's budget.
Okay, can you take a step back and really break down for everybody the difference between all of the different sparkling wines?
Well, that's going to be a long conversation.
Okay, well, we've got about four to five minutes.
Well, first,
and chime in, guys, if you want to.
I would say the biggest difference, if we talk about Prosecco, first of all, Prosecco is widely popular. It's from Italy. However, it's made in a different process. It's made using the Charmat process, whereas champagne and cava and most California sparklings use the traditional method, which is the secondary fermentation happening inside the bottle. With Prosecco, the Charmat process is basically the bubbles happen in a large vat, and then they transfer the sparkling wine into the bottle. So I think that's the biggest difference, first of all, when talking about sparkling wine, specifically with Prosecco. But then the rest of them, it's all a matter of maybe they're just using different grapes, obviously different terroir. I think that's pretty much the short gist of it.
Greg, can you tell us the major champagne grapes and how they differentiate from the other grapes made sparkling wine around the world?
Sure. There's three predominant grape varietals in champagne. Yeah. Pinot Noir, I think everybody knows, it's a major varietal in the world, and Chardonnay is the white. So you see Chardonnay in lots of different places, but that's the one white grape in champagne.
But we should say that Pinot Noir, when grown in Champagne, is most oftenly pressed right away and you have white wine.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
And so most Champagne, even though it's white, might have a certain percentage of Pinot Noir. And, that's confusing for people out there.
Right.
Yeah.
And then the third varietal is Pinot Meunier, which people may not know other than Champagne. It's sort of a lesser third grape in the region.
Although experiencing as well a kind of a revolution and becoming more important, right?
For sure.
Yeah. Okay, we've got these three grapes, and so how do those differ from the cava grapes or Prosecco or sparkling wine from California? Shad, you want to field this one?
Yeah, I think those grapes are inherently more complex and tastier than, say, Jurello or Glera. Used in Prosecco.
So Chardolo from Cava, Glera from Prosecco.
Yeah, I think these grapes just have more prestige and more complexity. And so if that's what you're starting your sparkling wine with, it's got to be better. I mean, it's got to be more intense and more length and complexity. That being said, I've had wines at Schramsberg that were incredible, and I would take the Pepsi challenge with champagne. Their J. Schramm line is incredible.
Right.
I've had vintage Cava that was... indistinguishable. I've had wines from Contrado underground in Asti that I also thought were champagne. If I thought they were just pouring champagne, I realized they make this in Asti. So I think there's all sorts of surprises to be discovered in the sparkling wine category. But something keeps everyone coming back to champagne.
Right. Okay, well, let's focus on champagne here for a second. And we mentioned, Greg, you told us we've got Pinot Noir, we've got Chardonnay, we've got Pinot Meunier. If we could talk a little bit about the subregions and where these wines really shine, I want to get into that, and then we're going to get into some of our picks and the wines that we've been drinking out in the lobby, and we put a few bottles down. So where, Emily, maybe I might turn to you as far as where Pinot Noir is famous, where Chardonnay is famous. And Greg, I'm seeing Greg is eager to answer this question. Where do we find the best Pinot Noir?
Sure. Well, you've got 17, if I'm remembering correctly, communes in Champagne. So they've been kind of subdivided for quite a while. But typically, Pinot Noir is predominant in the northern portion of Champagne, Montagne de Rome.
Okay.
That answers your question. Yeah. Chardonnay is from the Cote de Blanc, which is a little bit more central.
Yeah, and then Pinot Noir from the Montagne de the Valley de la Marne, right?
Correct, and you'll see it again in the south there.
So, Shad, I might turn to you because do folks out there know these different regions? Do they seek them out? Do they? Is the public in Austin? And this is a radio show about the wine experience in Austin. Are people gravitated to certain things? Do they know this? Do we have a ways to go? Do we need to work a little bit harder? What's your impression?
I don't think so. I think champagne, I've been struggling as a wine rep for so many years to just get people to recognize that this is not a style of wine. It's a place.
Right.
So I think there's a lot of confusion with what to call champagne. I think, you know, you'll hear people say, I want a champagne when they're at the theater, when you know they only have a bottle of, you know, like this little
basic bubbly,
187 of basic bubbles. Yeah. Right. So, no, I think, I don't think people have gotten that geeky, but that I think that's really the charge of the grower champagne movement to make people aware that just the same way with Burgundy as Pommard is different from Volnay, maybe, you know, wines from Chouilly are different than wines from Bouzy.
So you don't think we're taking it too far to be almost exclusively when we say champagne and we're not including cava or sparkling wine from California? Are we not being too snobbish as wine lovers? Do you think, Emily? I mean, people come into the shop and they say, oh, I want champagne, you know, cheap champagne. Well, you know, what does that mean? You know, cheap real champagne versus cheap sparkling wine from elsewhere in the world. You know, do you think we're being too snobby as a wine loving community?
No, I think it's really important to let the public know that there is a difference between the wines from Champagne versus cava versus Prosecco. And it's all about the way you deliver that information.
You deliver that in a fuzzy, furball, wine-loving way.
I mean, I have to deal with that on a daily basis, especially on a day like New Year's Eve when I spend the entire day talking about sparkling wine. It's really important to direct the customer to exactly what they're looking for within their budget without being condescending, because all day long we get the question, can you recommend a champagne?
Right.
And sometimes they're talking about true champagne, and sometimes they're just talking about something that has bubbles.
Right. I always find it so intriguing that there's very little that connects all the sparkling wines of the world, Prosecco with champagne, and the only thing that it is bubble. They're made differently. They're made from different grapes, et cetera, et cetera.
Oh, one more thing on that. I think when you visit Champagne, the region, and you see the Vignerons talking about how important the distinguishing characteristics of their region is and how their grandfathers and great-grandfathers or whatever have all been making champagne, I think it pains them to hear Americans saying, I want champagne, when they're talking about Andre, whatever, you know, the inexpensive bubbles.
I don't think we're being snobby enough.
Okay.
I feel like we're letting champagne be a category, like Shed said, that's just, it just means sparkling.
Yeah.
But if you have listeners that are collecting California Cabs or Bordeaux or Burgundies, and we let them off the hook of just any sparkling wines the same, we're not doing anyone a service for what's really out there in terms of quality distinctions.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like calling Bordeaux's, Left Bank Bordeaux's, a cab.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and that's, again, it just doesn't, it's a misnomer because you're ignoring the whole old world, left world paradigm, whereas grapes are important over here and land is important over there, the history, you know. So I think that's a huge thing that as people who sell to customers who don't know any better, that you make this distinction between the old world, we're talking about tradition, we're talking about rules, we're talking about, you know, in the new world, you're talking about grapes, you're talking about style, you're talking about trends. So I think there's a fundamental difference there between the old world and new world.
This is such wonderful conversation. We are going to take a quick short break. I'm here with Greg Willis from Ensemble Beverages, Shad Scott from Pioneer Wine, and Emily Arnold from Specs Wine and Liquor. This is Another Bottle Down on Co-op Radio, 91.7 FM and KOOP.org, streaming online. And if you've missed any part of this or any other episode and you want to stream it, it's anotherbottledownradio.com. We're going to hear a short message from our sponsors and our underwriters, and we'll be right back after the break. Oh, my God. We have put so many bottles down in the lobby since this break. We only had like 30 seconds, but we were able to do it.
Did what we could.
Okay, so we're back here. My name is Mark Rayshap, Another Bottle Down, Co-op Radio. We've got a lot to talk about. Tomorrow night is New Year's Eve, where a lot of sparkling wine will be consumed. We've spent the first half of the show talking about bubbles, champagne versus sparkling wine from around the world. And I want to tackle two subjects in this segment. Let's first talk about sweetness level. And on every bottle of sparkling wine, we see brut, extra dry, blah, blah, blah. You know, what does that mean, Greg? You want to give us a breakdown?
I can give you a little bit of a breakdown. Okay, so it can get kind of ridiculously complex very quickly.
Okay. But as most things champagne.
Right. Brut would be the normal designation for a dry champagne.
Okay.
You can then say extra brut or natural and be even drier, but that's kind of... Yeah. So so the dryness would mean you wouldn't really have that... Maybe people are beer drinkers. Maybe they're Belgian beer drinkers.
Right.
Yeah. Craft beer. You can kind of see where dryness comes into effect versus something where you can, you know, immediately sense some kind of sweetness.
Okay.
So it's that sort of tension that's going on in champagne.
Okay. So and then Shad, you want to talk to us about the brut. So brut is the dry, right? And then what do we have next?
So it goes up to extra dry if you're going sweeter.
So extra dry
and
is sweeter.
It goes to extra drier. Right.
Okay. So we are going to, this is for the record. This is very, very serious radio right here. We are a very serious source of information.
Serious as a heart attack.
Extra dry is sweeter than brut.
Which is stupid. But true.
Extra but true. Stupid. Yes. Extra stupid.
And then extra brut. So, and the drier style, which I feel like every, and we talked about this on the Riesling show, like the tastes are just getting, they're drying up. You know, right. Like sugar is kind of becoming demonized. Right. As maybe, right. You know, something that's not so good for you. And so I think people are just drinking drier these days, you know, the more British style. And so we have Brut Natur, Brut Extrême, you know, Extra Brut. And to me, this is the style I see more and more where there's no sugar.
Right. And we tasted actually two Extra Bruts in the lobby here, and we're going to get into those. Okay, so from Darius, so and I'll post these on the blog, from Darius at koop.org, we're going to say from Darius, so you have Brut Natur, and then you have Extra Brut. Emily, you have Brut, and then you have next.
And then you have Extra Dry.
Okay.
After that, you have Sec.
Sec.
And then you have Demi-Sec.
Demi-Sec.
And then you have Sweet or
Dew.
Dew.
Yeah. Okay, so okay,
which I
so,
think is important to note. You said it was stupid the way that extra dry is labeled extra dry, but there's some history behind that. And in the beginning, champagnes were much sweeter than they are today. So at the time, when the sweetness levels were much higher, and they right. found out that people wanted, when the quality became better, and they could add a little bit less sugar to cover flaws, and people wanted a bit drier style. That's when they went down to extra dry.
So at the time, extra dry was drier at the time.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
So that's where that term came from, which is confusing. And then people wanted drier styles, quality improved, less sugar needed to be added, and then that's where Brut came in.
Okay, good. So we've got these, but we should say that people who want a smooth, you know, and a lot of people out there want a smooth experience. What does that mean? Emily, how do you handle that? I mean, is that sweetness? Does that mean sweetness, or does that mean less acidity, or how do you maneuver that if somebody comes into the store and says, I want something smooth?
I think that begs a couple more questions. You really have to kind of pinpoint what they mean by smooth.
Okay.
Sometimes it could just be, I feel most of the time it refers to acidity.
Okay, yeah.
Something maybe a little less sharp, maybe a champagne that's got a little bit of creaminess to it.
Uh-huh.
That's usually the direction I go, but I have to ask a little bit more questions.
Okay. Okay, so try to, if you're thinking you like smooth out there, try to pinpoint, is it less acidity? Is it a creaminess? So you can think of those questions before you even go into the store out there. Okay. I want to talk about also aging on the lees and this character of toastiness and nuttiness. Greg, do you want to talk to us about how that comes about?
Yeah, it's actually just a matter of these being one of the things that makes champagne special, I think, to all of us, is it doesn't just happen overnight, and it's not just sort of an 8-month turnaround.
Champagne doesn't happen overnight?
Yeah. I mean,
You
go through everything that you go through for any other wine, but now you're going to leave it in the bottle for, you know, an average of 3 years, sometimes a little bit less, and then in some cases quite a bit more.
Right.
So that process is where we're developing a lot of richness and character. And so what you're talking about is lees, which is yeast, getting a chance to still interact with what's going on in the bottle.
Right. Yeah.
And one more thing on smooth and creaminess and all these sexy adjectives we've been using. Sometimes I use wood. I think right. aging champagne and wood is a thing. We sell Vilmar, and Vilmar ages their wines in wood. I think that's kind of a unique thing that also adds to this creamy, smooth factor.
Absolutely. Oh, I love these oak aged, and they're typically barrel fermented as well. So they're fermented in barrel, and I don't know about Vilmar, but you know, you have a lot of barrel fermentations and then aged, and then but ultimately all champagne will go to the bottle to rest on the lees, and that's where it gets that character.
And maybe that's more common with like Tête de Cuvée, which I don't think we've touched on, which a lot of houses will have their highest expression, be it Cristal or Dom Pérignon, probably being the most, you know, widely recognized is Dom Pérignon and Cristal from Roederer.
And the Grand Dame. And
the Grand Dame. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think if you're going for something super fancy, to look at this Tête de Cuvée category as this is the highest expression coming out of champagne.
Right, and typically those see more time on the lees or the yeast, and so they develop a little bit of a richer quality, right? Okay, let's get into the champagnes that we've been tasting out in the lobby, right? Shad, do you want to present the first one, the Le Monnier Bernier?
Yeah, Le Monnier Bernier, biodynamic practices, which is some next level growing that's respectful to the ecology of the earth.
And it's as we wrap up, or as 2 weeks ago, we wrapped up the climate talks in Paris, you know, and there's a lot of stuff that is affecting vineyards there.
Yeah, and this is an extra Brut style, and it's also a Blanc de Blanc style, which I think that's an important thing for people to know. If they're going to buy a bottle tonight, you're going to see Blanc de Noir, and you're going to see Blanc de Blanc. And the concept that white wine can come from red grapes, I think, is kind of mind-blowing for some people. You know, the fact that you can have all Pinot Noir and Meunier and have a white wine. So I think that's an important thing for people to understand. Blanc de Blanc being all Chardonnay. And I find these to be really the katana blade, the laser beams of champagne. I mean, they're sharp and they're acidic, and they have these hard edges. And I think they have higher acidity generally, and they're just really food friendly with, say, spicy food or seafood or something that's really delicate. Where Blanc de Noir has more length and I think depth of fruit and maybe roundness. Yeah. So I think those are important terms as well.
Okay, you've heard it. Blanc de Blanc is the katana blade of champagne out there. Yeah. Okay, Greg, can you tell us a little bit about Jacassin 738? And this was one of my favorites of this tasting that we just had right now.
I will try to tell you just a little bit.
Just a little
bit. It's
easy
to talk about a lot of things with Jacassin. Historically, so this was Napoleon's go-to-battle champagne.
Wow.
So, you know, in terms of us pushing champagne, we're not pushing hard enough because people are not drinking champagne in moments like that, like they used to. But he gave it a medal. These guys actually invented the cage that you see. So
I do drink champagne every time I go to battle.
I appreciate that.
With my wife.
And I know that about you. So anyway, the house has been around for a long time.
Yeah.
But what they've done recently in about the last 10 years is make a distinction, which is sort of ironic. We're talking about how much we love champagne, and you mentioned the fact that champagne maybe kind of hurt themselves with all these houses making styles almost like industrial, you know, size. It always tastes the same. Jacassin went back and said, no, we want to make it like every other wine region in France, whereas each vintage is unique and tastes different.
Okay.
So the only way to make the label sort of designate that is for the number to change every year on the label. So they started this cuvée system. The one we just tried was Cuvée 738. It's the 10th time they've done this, so it's 10 different vintages. But it's based on the 2010 vintage. Obviously, it had to be in bottle for 3 years, which we just discussed.
Right.
So we're just now tasting it. It was actually in bottle for 4 years. But next year, you'll see Cuvée 739 because it will taste different.
Cool.
So the combination of grapes will change. The way that the grapes were vinified and harvested and the flavors that were given will change because they want to show you the best wine each year rather than just a style that's consistent.
Okay, and so that's so intriguing. So because champagne has always had a difficulty ripening grapes every year, and so they go into this blending of non-vintages so they can hedge their bets and they can make good wine every year because they're blending. Shad, do you see, and you're a big grower champagne guy, do you see the grower champagne houses doing that less, and they want to create less of a consistent style and more featuring what that year actually gave, or what do you see going on there?
Well, I think it's one of the important things with wine is, and what keeps me in the business every year, is you have a whole new set of wines every year. It's not like Coca-Cola where you you know, it's the same, or whiskey, you know, where they want Jack Daniels to taste like Jack Daniels every single time, every bottle you buy. One, wine is exciting because it's different every time, right? So the fact that it reflects the terroir and the vintage makes it a much more exciting wine. And as far as growers, you know, distinguishing growers on the shelf for the novice, I would look for the little RM, which means récoltant manipulant. And I'm not saying all grower champagne is better than négociant champagne. I'm just saying I prefer it because it shows more like regular wine. It behaves more like regular wine. And négociant will have a little NM on there. It means we buy our fruit.
And Emily, do you agree? Should we just love grower champagne versus the large houses champagne just because it is, or because they just tell us more and you can kind of follow them along better and you can kind of root for them that way?
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with Shad with what he said, and I agree with you as well. But I think there's something to be said for the large houses. And I mean, many of them have been around, you know, since the dawn of champagne, and you can't forget about their contributions to the world of champagne. And there's some really great houses out there,
right?
You know, that people can always turn to that are going to be fantastic champagnes every single time.
I agree with you, and I think that the grower champagne movement is also making the large houses better, but that's a different conversation for a different time. Okay, we had L'Hermandier Bernier, Jacquesson 738, and then we had the Pierre Moncuy, right? Who wants to talk about that? Yeah, Emily liked that one.
Yeah, I did, and this was my first time having the champagne, and actually the first time I've ever heard of it, but if memory serves me correctly, it was also Extra Brut.
Yeah.
And a Blanc de Blanc.
So all Chardonnay.
So all Chardonnay.
Very low sugar amount.
From Clos de Menil, was that correct? Which is one of the most famous vineyards for Chardonnay in Champagne. I absolutely loved it. It was really precise, really crisp and vibrant, lots of kind of lemony characteristics, and some really nice earthiness too, which was intriguing. So I really like that one.
Yeah, me too. And then for our final selection, we have Pierre Paillard Brut Rosé. Greg, you want to introduce this one and and tell us just a brief introduction to how rosé is made in Champagne?
Sure. Yeah, well, I'll bring that up in just a moment. But so the Paillard family has been in Bouzy, one of the better named communes in Champagne.
For Pinot Noir.
Yes, so famous for Pinot Noir.
And just a great name.
Just a great name, anyway.
Dizzy, boozy.
Yeah. It's got to work. We had the rosé. So obviously rosé a lot of times isn't what folks make the most of, but you know there is a demand for a beautiful pink-colored sparkling wine. So you're asking kind of how that's made, because Pinot Noir is a major grape in the region, but we're seeing champagne that's clear because there's no contact with skin. It's just juice. Yeah. So some amount of skin contact has to be made for there to be a red pigment. In the case of the wine we just tasted, kind of unique for Bouzy. A lot of times Bouzy are those really dark reds that you're going to see on the shelf in the champagne section. The darkest ones are probably Pinot Noir from Bouzy. This was a much lighter shade of pink because there's just a little still wine that was added into it. So they actually call it Bouzy Rouge, which is still Pinot Noir added at kind of at the last minute for color.
Right.
If you're interested in rosé champagne, the listeners out there can check out this show called A Year in Champagne with Martine. And I think it taught me a lot about the blending process and how rosés from this region are different than rosés from other regions.
And beautiful imagery, too.
Absolutely.
We have unfortunately run out of time. I wish you all the most happy of New Year's tomorrow night, New Year's Eve. I hope that you drink wonderful champagne and enjoy the wonders of good friendship and good love. So this is our last episode of the year. Thank you so much for staying in tune with Co-op Radio and Another Bottle Down. I want to wish you my sincerest of thanks for your support and tuning in. If you missed any part of this episode, it's anotherbottledownradio.com. It's Co-op Radio or koop.org for all information on the station. We do have our birthday party that is coming up on January 9th. For more information, go to the co-op website. And guys, I wanted to thank you so much. We have Greg Willis from Ensemble Beverages, Shad Scott from Pioneer Wine, and Emily Arnold from Specs Wine and Liquor. Guys, happy New Year's to you. Thank you so much for coming in the studio.
Cheers.
Same to you. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, stay tuned, and we will see you in 2016. Happy New Year, folks.